We're looking at the costs to counties as they stay on top of a powerful snowstorm. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Hope you're getting out. Some counties across northeast and central Wisconsin reached a foot of snow by yesterday afternoon. Eau Claire has already tied a record for the most snow in the first 10 days of February with 18.9 inches. That ties with 2004, according to the National Weather Service. Blowing and drifting still having an impact this morning. And with the plowing comes the salt. Do you think municipalities, counties, and the state are using too much salt on the sidewalks and roads? Or are there areas of the highway system that you haven't seen enough salt application? We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. James Hughes is the state highway maintenance engineer for the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. James, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Well, we'll talk about salting roads in a minute, but first let's look at the budget. At what point can the department assess where it is, where it sits with the winter maintenance budget?
Well, Wisconsin's unique. We hire all 72 counties to do 100% of our winter maintenance. We're the only state in the country that does it that way. So there's a lot of efficiencies with that, and we think it's the best model in the country. Cost-wise, when you look at cost per lane mile, for example, last winter, Wisconsin had about $2,800 per lane mile of our 34,678 lane miles. When you compare that with Minnesota and Michigan, we're more than $1,000 a lane mile, cost-wise, less than the two states on each side of us.
Does that mean, though, each county goes about maintaining its roads after a snowstorm a little bit differently? A little more nuances.
Yeah, there is. And in fact, what's interesting, having the counties do the state highways, we've been using algorithms to figure out route optimization. And we can combine low-volume state highways with some of the county routes as the county's doing all the plowing. And we gain a lot of efficiencies that way.
Oh, wow. So you really do some math modeling here to figure out what to plow first and how to merge different areas in plowing?
Absolutely. And we have some counties like Dane County, they might have two or three different plans depending on how much winter they're going to get, how much snow is going to fall.
So how does the state budget work for something that can be so unpredictable like the weather? Some years you get a lot of snow, other years you don't. One area gets dumped on, another area does not.
Well, that's a good question. Thank you. There's a state statute, 84072A, that says that the counties do the winter maintenance at actual cost, whatever it costs. So they're not at risk doing a state highway maintenance because they're going to be paid exactly what it costs. And they've been partners with us for about 100 years doing winter maintenance. And I can tell you, they do an outstanding job, the men and women out there doing the snow plowing for our state. They just do a great job.
So far, how do the winter conditions we've experienced compare to previous years in terms of the amount of plowing, the amount of de-icing the department has to do?
Well, every year we calculate a winter severity index, and the last three winters were right around the 100. 100 would be an average winter. And, you know, this year it started out kind of light, and all of a sudden we got winter quickly. So we have a lot of winter here. So we'll calculate that. We calculate that as we go. We still have not hit 100 yet, but it's moving up the scale pretty quick with the weather we're getting.
We're talking with James Hughes, the state highway maintenance engineer for the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. We're looking at road maintenance during extreme winter conditions. With your questions along the way at 800-642-1234, have you been taking steps to use less salt around your property? Tell us your strategies. Do you prefer sand over salt? And why is that? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Tim now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Tim.
Hello. I've got an idea.
What's the idea to reduce salt?
Okay, well, first of all, I don't use salt in my driveway. I chip it, and, you know, I wait for the perfect weather conditions, and I realize everybody can't do that. But my idea was no salt on roads 25 miles an hour or less because you don't really need it. You could plow it not all the way down to the pavement. You'd have a little traction. You're not going that fast. Might save a lot of salt in the lakes. And that's my idea.
Tim, thanks for the call. James, how does that sound? And what is the approach to salt with the DOT?
Well, we've been looking at new ways to to reduce the amount of salt. And the science is out there. There's evidence-based maintenance, and we've actually proven it last year running pilots where we add water to the salt. We make it into a brine immediately. Salt in a dry form is inert. It doesn't do any snow or ice melting. And by applying it in liquid, the liquid stays on the highway when it's applied. You can use almost three times less, but we've been finding anywhere from 30 to 50% salt reductions in the counties that are testing this right now. So we're finding a lot of success. The state recently purchased 15 high-capacity brine makers and spread them out throughout the state. And we have quite a few counties that are working using more liquids and finding they're using a lot less salt for the state highway.
Well, what happens in deep freezes when salt just doesn't work as well?
Well, actually, that's what's really nice about the liquids. With the liquids, we can add additives to the liquid like calcium or magnesium, and we can get that temperature down well below zero where it's still cutting through the ice and snow. With dry granular salt, you're looking at 10 to 15 degrees. It really just takes way too long to work and is very ineffective.
So how does a department like yours prepare for a big snow event? What resources do you have to assemble to gear up for a powerful snowstorm?
Well, first of all, we work all year round at it. It's not just when the storm hits us. And the counties are always well prepared, and they do their own preparation. They talk to us about the science of moving to these liquids and the additives you can put in the liquids to reduce the salt use. And like I said, we're finding a lot of success with that.
Now, as Tim said, perhaps using less salt or no salt in areas where the speed limit is below a certain point. Do all roads get salted in some way, shape, or form right now, or do you incorporate sand?
For the most part, all the state highways, we don't have many places where the speed limit's below 25 miles an hour, so all state highways see salt. When it gets very, very cold, sometimes you'll see sand at intersections because salt just doesn't work very well. But we're finding with the liquids, we can cut right through that stuff. So we're learning a lot as we move forward and changing the way we define best winter maintenance practices.
And why does sand not work on a highway?
Sand doesn't melt any snow or ice at all. It doesn't melt at all. And, you know, to apply sand, you're looking at, you know, 1,000 pounds per lane mile to even be somewhat effective. And it's just not, where salt is like 300 pounds a lane mile, and you can equate that to liquids about 60 gallons a lane mile, where there's only 2.29 pounds of salt per gallon in the brine.
So it sounds like salt brine is the most efficient way to go. Where do you see your department heading next with salt brine?
Well, we assembled a technical advisory committee that consists of about 15 counties that are testing the liquids right now. We tested them last year. Huge success. We're finding a lot of success again this year. So we're going to continue that work. And then we're working with the University of Wisconsin scientists that are gathering the data from these counties, putting it together. And we're going to have different application rates and different recipes for different types of winter events that hit Wisconsin. And with that, we're going to save a lot of salt and we're going to be a lot more efficient.
Well, James, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
James Hughes is State Highway Maintenance Engineer for the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Stay with us as we continue this conversation about salt applications on the roads. You're hearing about it on the Ideas Network. We're talking about salt and sand on our roads and how it impacts our water systems here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. WISDOT uses an average of 526,000 tons of salt and 14,000 tons of sand per season statewide. Sand is sometimes used to improve traction on ice, but the drawback, according to WISDOT, is that it only takes about 30 vehicles traveling at highway speeds to blow the sand off the road. Do you think municipalities, counties, and the state are using too much salt on the sidewalks and roads? Have you seen it eat away at your car and perhaps ruin your shoes? What approach do you take to sand and salt? We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Hillary Dugan is an assistant professor at UW-Madison Center for Limnology. She studies environmental impacts on lakes, including lakes here in Wisconsin, the Arctic, and Antarctica. Hillary, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks.
We're talking about, you know, on a day when we're seeing salt spread all over our roads, it's a good time to have a conversation about how that salt goes into our waterways. What is the impact on de-icing? How is that impacting our environment?
Yeah, so most people think of salt as an environmentally friendly compound. I mean, we eat it on a regular basis, but when it gets to quantities, as you know, you said WISDOT puts down 500,000 tons a year, and that's just WISDOT. You know, private applicators are putting down more, and people are at their houses. And so when you're putting down, you know, 1 million tons a year across the state, all of that is going to end up in our freshwaters. So salt works because it's soluble. It breaks down into sodium and chloride ions, and that's what depresses the freezing point and melts ice. And then once it's dissolved in water, it quickly enters either surface water, so it can be washed into rivers and then into lakes, or it can percolate down into groundwater. And so every year when we apply those, you know, million tons, they're ending up in our freshwater systems.
Is that damage salt has done to the environment, is that irreversible, or is there a way to solve that?
Yeah, the great news is it's completely reversible. Salt is what we call a conservative compound, and so it's not really taken up by a lot of organisms in the environment, and so it has the potential to be flushed out. So if we stop applying salt to our environment, it's eventually going to be flushed out by just rain and snowmelt, which is really great news. It's not the news we hear most of the time about environmental pollution.
And we just heard about the improvements made by WISDOT using salt brine, a mixture of salt and water instead of regular road salt. Is this a viable alternative?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from the environment's point of view, anything we can do to minimize the total mass of salt being put down is going to be, you know, effective. And so, you know, municipalities are seeing, I think the quote was 30 to 50% reduction in salt loading using brine. And so that's, if you can cut out, you know, a few 100,000 tons of salt, that's going to have a huge improvement for the environment.
Let's bring in a call now. Let's go to Erin joining us from Oshkosh. Hi, Erin.
Hi. I had a question about salt alternatives being used in the state of Wisconsin. So anything that we can do to reduce the cost of salting our roads or also increasing efficiency. I lived on the West Coast for a while, and I know the state of Oregon used beet juice as a salt alternative. Is there anything out there like that we could use that's a little more environmentally friendly but also cost-effective?
So Aaron's talking about beet juice and food byproducts, perhaps like pickle juice. What do we know?
Yeah, that's something that comes up a lot in people's questions. And they're not great alternatives, actually, because most of those compounds have a lot, they're organic material, and so they can feed microbes living in waters, and so they actually can create oxygen demand problems in our freshwater environments. So they're not a fantastic alternative when we're thinking about the environment, and they're not being used a whole lot around here. They are being used a bit. They help, they're kind of sticky, and so they help sand or salt adhere to the surface. The bad news is there's no, you know, great alternative to salt. Salt is really effective at what it does if we're talking about temperatures right below freezing. It's also really inexpensive, which is why it's been used for so long. And so I think the best route forward, which is what, you know, the state is thinking a lot about, is just really reducing the salt load. And so optimizing both routes and using it in certain weather conditions and really just scaling back on what we've been putting down for the last, you know, 5 decades.
Let's go to Mary now, joining us from Menominee. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Happy snow day.
Happy snow day to you. What's on your mind?
I just have an alternative that we use at our home, and it is wood chip. And we put them down, like, if it should rain, and then before it freezes up, and you put it down, and it keeps you from slipping.
So wood chips giving Mary traction at her home. What do we know about wood chips?
Yeah, so again, you know, they're being used to improve traction, which is great, and that's the same reason sand's used. Some people use, you know, kitty litter or little rocks, gravel, for traction. And so I think thinking about whether or not you need to melt the snow versus whether or not you can walk, you could be able to walk on the snow if it, you know, had better traction. And so often in areas where we're not driving quickly, or it's not a hill, so sort of flat sidewalks or maybe parking lots, some of these materials to just, you know, allow us to walk easy, more easily, are better alternatives. Although on a large scale, wood chips are still an organic material, and so you're still, you know, potentially introducing a lot of carbon into the environment. So I don't think the state, for instance, is going to go towards a route like that, but on a small scale, it's totally appropriate.
So when you look at, say, inner city lakes, do you see changes over the years with the impact of salt on that water?
Yeah, we see changes in our salt concentration throughout the state. Madison's a great example because it's a big urban area and we have big lakes here. And we've seen basically since the 1950s a steady increase in the salt concentration in those lakes. And the good rule of thumb is the smaller the lake, the faster you can change the salt concentration. And so, for instance, here in Madison, small lakes like Lake Wingra are a lot saltier than Lake Mendota. But then on the flip side, you can also decrease the concentrations more quickly in small lakes. But we see this throughout the Midwest and the Northeast of the country. Even the Great Lakes have had increases in salt concentrations. And that's staggering given that they're massive bodies of water and actually have a pretty small watershed as well.
So when you see the rise in salt in these inner city lakes, for instance, what do you do about it? How do you help the ecosystem?
Yeah, a lot of it's through outreach and communication and just having people realize that when we put salt down on roads, it's going into our fresh water. And people are starting to become aware of that, especially here in Madison, where we're starting to see high concentrations in our groundwater, which impacts our drinking water. And so the city is acutely aware of that problem because it's going to have huge economic ramifications if our wells become too salty to drink. You know, that's going to cost the state millions of dollars to drill new wells. And so they're trying to be proactive, working with the state roads commission, or sorry, the city road commission, to really understand how salt's sort of being rooted in the city and into our water.
We're talking with Hillary Dugan about, she's assistant professor at UW-Madison Center for Limnology, looking at the impact of salt on our lakes. Hillary, where does salt fall in the order of impact? Because you see runoff in all different forms going into lakes in Wisconsin. You know, you've got the runoff from what people are putting on their lawns and fertilizer. So where does salt fit into that picture? How much of an impact?
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of our lakes are impacted by a lot of different stressors in the state. And the one we hear the most often is nutrient runoff from mostly from agriculture. And so that's phosphorus and nitrogen that kind of feeds algae. And we have, you know, these terrible blooms in the summer. And salt, in comparison, is relatively benign and at low concentrations is completely natural. But a lot of the species living in our lakes are adapted to freshwater conditions. And so they've evolved to not really have to remove salt from their bodies. And so as we add salt, we're just stressing these aquatic species even more than they already are from other stressors. And so we're just sort of piling one more thing on top of them. And some species are able to adapt fairly well. Others may not be able to. And we're also seeing that we're having more and more invasive species from areas of the world that were brackish and sort of giving invasive species a leg up in our freshwater lakes if we keep increasing the salt concentrations.
So you say you look at all of the different alternatives to reducing the amount of salt we put down. Is there one thing in particular that we can really work on? It sounds like salt brine is a particular little breakthrough, but are there other mini breakthroughs that we can all do individually?
Yeah, I think it's really about communicating the impact of salt. And so the state, you know, realizes the problem, and they have a lot of economic incentive to decrease their salt use. The area that we really haven't tackled much is private applicators, and so the state's only half of the salt that's being put down. The rest is being put down on sidewalks and parking lots. And as a caller already said, that maybe in areas where we're not driving quickly, like parking lots, we shouldn't be using as much salt as we are. you know, maybe we can put down something for traction or wear boots that have traction, and really think about where salt is necessary. And so if you're out shopping at your favorite box store, you know, just be aware of the salt load on that parking lot. And, you know, as a consumer, you have the right to talk to the manager and ask them to put down less salt, and that's going to have an impact.
Well, Hillary, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Hillary Dugan is an assistant professor at UW-Madison Center for Limnology. She studies environmental impacts on lakes, including lakes in Wisconsin. We've been talking about the impact of salt on our groundwater. Up next, it's news. Then we take a look at Governor Evers' options for funding the state's significant transportation needs. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about transportation funding and how to make this budget work on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Tony Evers and Transportation Secretary Designee Craig Thompson are sending strong signals that the upcoming state budget will include a proposal to raise the gas tax to pay for roads. Governor Evers indicated there was some consensus forming on transportation as he talked with reporters yesterday in Madison.
From what I hear, at least part of it is gas tax increases. But again, I want to make sure that the final report is on my desk and before we insert it into the budget.
What do you think Wisconsin's biggest transportation needs are? Do you agree or disagree with a gas tax that would increase with inflation? Does this make sense as a way to help transportation funding, or is it unfair? We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Steve Walters is senior producer at Wisconsin Eye. Steve, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Kate, thank you very much for discussion of an absolutely fascinating debate in the Capitol.
Well, we've talked about how the governor formed a task force, 34 members, and he'll get his proposal to your budget to the legislature by the end of the month.
February 28th.
So do we have any clues about how the governor's budget might address transportation funding? What do we know?
Well, let's talk about what the governor said yesterday. It seems to be that he's coming closer, as you said, to an increase in the gas tax. But let's set that up. Our gas tax has been 30.9 cents since 2006. Now you have an additional 2 pennies that goes to the petroleum underground cleanup fund. But let's focus on the gas tax, 30.9 cents since 2006. And the estimates given at the Transportation Task Force meeting in La Crosse was if you raise that by 5 cents, that would raise $165 million. And the beautiful thing about that is, according to WISDOT, is that's just a matter of adjusting all of those pumps up 5 cents. And so the issue there is you can get that money pretty quickly.
It's kind of like a clean adjustment. There isn't a lot of wait time or baggage. You just, boom, you can do that.
Right, because some of the other options that they discussed at the task force meeting would take until 3 years to kick in. In other words, if we set our registration fee for vehicles according to new cars, like Iowa and I think Minnesota do, or maybe Michigan, that would take 3 years to phase in. So you have two things you could do immediately. You could raise the registration fee, $75, which has also not been changed since 2008, or you can dial up the gas tax.
So step back for us for a moment as we talk about transportation funding. At this point, are we actually considering new construction and repairs, or are we trying to cover debt?
Well, first of all, I'll deal with debt. In the 2010-2011 fiscal year, which ended on June 30, 2011, debt service was 11.5%, according to the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. In the current year, which ends on June 30th, our debt service, in other words, what we pay for past IOUs, is 19.6%. So $1 out of every $5 that you and I pay when we buy gas or register our vehicles now goes to pay off debt. So that deals with the debt part of your question.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part was what? Excuse me.
Well, the other part is what about new construction, new projects, and the whole aspect of what repairs are part of this this transportation backlog?
Thank you. I'm going to quote Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald as saying we have 5 projects in Southeast Wisconsin that cost at least $1 billion. So we've done the east-west on the Zoo Freeway, but we haven't done the north-south. And when you talk about the east-west from the Zoo Freeway into downtown Milwaukee, past Miller Park, American Family Park.
And get your name straight now, right?
Right.
Or about to get your name straight.
That's another $1 billion project. So when Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, we have 5 projects in Southeast Wisconsin, which may include from Madison to the Illinois border that cost $1 billion. We are talking about completion of some majors. And when you focus on Southeast Wisconsin and Southern Wisconsin, legislators from up north say, hey, what about us? So that's part of what makes this so fascinating.
And these projects are coming together piecemeal. They're not
yes,
being able
they are.
To do all at once.
Right.
And that can have an impact as well.
Right. Yes. The budget recommendations coming from Mr. Evers and Secretary of Transportation Craig Thompson will determine when we can address finishing the Zoo Freeway, when the timeline for the Interstate 3990 from Madison to the Illinois border, and in Madison, 151, the Verona bypass.
So how could having a new Democratic governor impact transportation policy and funding in our state?
Well, it's interesting because the governor has indicated as recently as yesterday that he is open to recommending a gas tax increase. Remember, former Governor Scott Walker said, I will not raise the registration fee, $75 that you and I pay, or the gas tax, 30.9. And you had Assembly Republicans last session who were willing to put a package out there that did a whole lot of things. It had a lot of moving parts, including repealing the minimum markup, but that was a non-starter, both with Senate Republicans and Governor Walker. So you have a whole new dynamic with Governor Evers and Secretary of Transportation Craig Thompson.
Well, let's bring in a call now. Let's go to Cece joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Cece.
Hello.
What's
Good
on your
morning.
Mind? Yeah. How would you approach transportation?
Well, I want to thank you for bringing up the topic. I think it's important. But it seems like we keep putting Band-Aids on everything, and at some point we're going to have to talk about the high-speed railways. And we keep just getting farther and farther in debt and putting Band-Aids on things and taking on new projects and roads, but at some point we got to address it. Is anybody talking about that?
Thank you for your call, Cece. Long range, the goal of Secretary of Transportation Thompson and Governor Evers right now is to make a visible dent in our shortfall in the next 2 years. In other words, when I interviewed Secretary Thompson last week, he said, people have to see that we have improved our roadways within 2 to 3 years. He's saying we are not able in the next budget to make a long-term 5, 10, 15-year funding, but I really want to recommend a package that people will notice the improvements within 2 to 3 years. So long-term, not a lot of focus, but they are trying to make progress in the short term.
And when you look at things like rail, that is huge investment. That would mean some major investment, would it not?
Yes, it would. And that's the reason that rail was people from the rail industry, railroad passengers were part of the 34-member task force,
mm-hmm.
in addition to someone from the beer brewing industry. And I said to Secretary of Transportation Thompson, why do you have someone from beer brewing? And he said, because we had heard that the roughness of Wisconsin highways were damaging the delivery of beer bottles, which in Wisconsin, wow, that is a venal sin.
Steve Walters is with us. He's senior producer at Wisconsin Eye. We're talking about ways to fund the transportation budget with your insights along the way at 800-642-1234. Steve, as we look at the traction that is gaining on this gas tax, is it a partisan issue? Is there an actual partisan divide on this?
Oh, certainly. When you have the biggest problem for a gas tax increase, I think, is in the conservative Republican members of the Senate. They've gained even more conservatives. So the issue here, now let's look at the makeup of the Senate. There are 14 Democratic senators. I hope my math is right. So if all 14 Democratic senators back the governor's highway funding plan, it would take three Republican senators to come over to pass it. If Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald lets that provision be debated. So I think there's more potential synergy with Governor Evers and Assembly Republicans on this than potentially Senate Republicans. But can I ask a question for your audience?
Go right ahead.
All right. Here's the deal. I just put four new tires on my Honda Civic, and I paid state and local sales tax of $24.64. My wife and I drive 85% in Wisconsin. Should that $24.64 not go to the state general fund, should it go to the transportation fund? I'd love to hear from you viewers on that.
And the number is 800-642-1234. Let's bring John in Sturgeon Bay into the conversation. John, hi.
Hi, good morning. To me, I'm not, you know, usually if it's a partisan issue, especially on the right, they may say, you know, this is just tax and spend. But this is just a situation where the money is earmarked for very specific needs. And the average driver, I drive a lot, 40,000 miles a year, and the average driver might notice, and I mean, over a two-week period, a 5% change in gas, but it really doesn't affect how much they drive. And it's probably the best way to spread out, you know, the hurt, if you will, you know, by everybody, you know, maybe $5 a month if you drive a lot.
So John is saying spread out the hurt.
Well, Secretary Thompson said, if you raise the gas tax 5 cents for the owner of a passenger car in Milwaukee, that will net out at about an additional $40 a year. So when he talks about, here's a way for $2 to $3 a month to make a down payment on improving our roads, it seems to me like he's edging closer to the gas tax increase. But thanks for your call. I have a question. Driving 40,000 miles a year is a lot. How often do you have to have your car realigned paying for that over these wonderful Wisconsin roads?
Because
sir?
There is the wear and tear
yes.
element as well. Certainly that factors into, you know, what people are paying when they go, you know, and hit yep. one of those potholes.
And remember last campaign, Scott Holes? Those billboards, Kate, remember?
I remember.
What a wonderful debate.
We're looking at how lawmakers aim to solve the state's transportation funding issues with Steve Walters as our guide. He is senior producer at Wisconsin Eye, the public affairs media organization. Join in at 800-642-1234. What ideas do you have on the table to fund transportation? How would you go about raising $500 million for roads by 2021? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking transportation funding and the governor's forthcoming budget here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last month, the governor formed a 34-member task force to gather ideas on how to raise revenue for the state's transportation needs. And the governor told reporters yesterday that the task force would be releasing its recommendations for transportation in the near future. So how would you solve transportation? Is it raising the gas tax? Would you explore tolling? Call in at 800-642-1234. Steve Walters is our guide. He's also throwing out questions for you. He's senior producer at Wisconsin Eye. Let's go back to the phones now and bring in Steve joining us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. You know, obviously, most of our roads, is my understanding, are paid for with the gas tax. And with so many energy-efficient vehicles on the roads, specifically hybrids, and electric cars that are on the roads, and I just saw two Priuses pass me, they don't use a lot of gas. So they're not paying their fair share of the tax burden. What about providing a surcharge for anyone that owns a vehicle that gets you know, more than X number of gallons per gas of $300 to $500 a year, how much would that bring in revenue every year and have it be those people paying their fair share of taxes?
Steve, thanks very much for your question. We just started putting a surcharge on electric and hybrid vehicles. Now, I don't have the Fiscal Bureau paper in front of me. My recollection is that if you have an electric or hybrid, you're going to pay an additional $50, kicking it from $75, which I pay on my Honda CR-V, to a hybrid or electric. And so we've started doing that. But if memory serves, it only brings in $2, maybe $3 million. Secondly, I want to go to your initial point. 90% of the $1.9 billion that we get in state tax revenues comes from only two sources, and that is our gas tax and our registration fee. So we've started charging more for hybrid and electrics and their registration fee. Should it be an even greater surcharge? That's a policy decision for the governor and lawmakers.
Let's bring in John now, joining us from Green Bay. John, hi.
Hi, good morning. So I'm an independent and kind of a, you know, pragmatic when it comes to tax policy. Is the Evers administration concerned about the regressive nature of a gas tax?
Meaning that it affects the poor and rich not equally. Okay.
John, thanks for your call. That is a concern among Democrats. However, there's apparently the governor thinks an emerging consensus that the gas tax is the fairest way. Remember, it hasn't been increased since 2006, when we also eliminated indexing, but that's a different concept, that the raising the gas tax is the fairest way to tax everybody, including Illinois residents, Minnesota residents, Iowa residents, Michigan residents. Yes, there's a regressivity issue, but the governor may feel there's an emerging consensus that it's one of the fairest ways as a pay-as-you-go tax.
Let's bring in Eric in Kenosha. Eric, hi.
Hi. I think the underlying theme that I think everyone can agree with is it's fair if it's pay as you go. And the gas tax is certainly a fair way to do that. Licensing, registration, the taxes you mentioned on your automotive parts that you buy for your vehicle are all indices of how much you drive. And as I think the main thing is fair disclosure so that people can see that the money they're paying for driving is actually going to pay for roads and not being tossed into general revenue funds, which I'm an Illinois transplant. You tend to think they create these specific taxes, but then the money doesn't really go to where you thought it was going. So I think that's important as well. But pay as you go, fairness, I don't think many people would object to that.
Well, we've also heard from some lawmakers to say this is unfair for people who actually are trying to commute from rural areas to jobs that they need to be able to do in order to make a living. So there is that. There's that tension there. Steve?
Eric? Eric, thanks for your call. Here's my question. Do you think when you pay to have your car realigned, or in my case, I just bought new tires for the Honda CR-V. Do you think those sales taxes should go into the transportation fund? Because right now they're going into the general fund to pay for health care, school aids, and prisons and the university system. I'm just curious.
I think that there can be an apportionment of them, but my real point is simply we should be paying as we go. And all of the things we spend on our car are indices indicative of our driving. And the more we spend on our car, it's probably because we're driving more than other people who, you know, are not driving so much. Should that money be going into the other funds you mentioned, the other costs of being in business as a government? You know, those things should be paid for. I think they should be funded. I think that people need to feel like whatever it is they're spending, they know where it's going, and it's going to the places where we were told it would be going.
Eric, thanks so much for the call. Steve Walters, we have so many different options on the table. What options are the most politically feasible at this point?
Well, you can pick up small amounts of money by increasing the title fee. If you bump that a dollar, that raises $1.5 million. If you eliminate the deduction for evaporation, which I didn't even know existed, you pick up $13 million. The quickest way to raise money is the a $10 increase in the in the registration fee. That would bring in $40 to $47 million, depending on which estimate you believe. And the gas tax, you bump that up. Again, that's $165 million. So those are the ones that would bring in more cash immediately to address what the Evers administration says is our immediate need to show drivers that we're making progress.
What policies are the least likely to happen in Wisconsin, do you think?
Well, if you take all the revenues from cars and car repairs and the tires I just bought, and you move it from the general fund to the transportation fund, that's $630 million. Now, that would solve your problem, but it would have less money for schools, healthcare, the UW, the prison system. Also, the idea of making people self-report was floated. In other words, you would get 3,000 free miles, but after that, you'd pay 1 cent per mile above that. Now, that caller that drove 40,000 miles, he'd only get 3,000 without having a self-report. That's a non-starter, especially with Senator Howard Markline, who said from Southwest Wisconsin, many of my constituents drive to jobs in Illinois and Iowa. That would be unfair. So I don't consider those as palatable and politically possible.
We saw transportation as such a huge sticking point to delay the budget in the last administration. Do you see that happening with this administration?
I'm an optimist, Kate. I just think there's some potential synergy here with Governor Evers and Assembly Republicans. So there are probably other major sticking points, including expansion of Medicaid, but that's a separate show. So I am optimistic they can reach a highway funding compromise.
What are you watching for in these days leading up to February 28th when we may see a budget?
Well,
I'm
looking for more signs. We got one yesterday when the governor says there seems to be a potential consensus among the special interest groups, the 34-member task force, to raise the gas tax. Is he next going to say that we haven't raised the registration fees on our 3.7 million autos, our 969,000 light trucks, and our 298,000 heavy trucks since 2008? Is he going to signal an increase in the registration fee? Potentially, you could see diversion of some amount of money, $50 million, $100 million, I'm just floating this, from the general fund to the transportation fund.
So as we wrap up here very quickly, you know, as you talk with lawmakers, do you find that it's their constituents pushing them to be able to side one way or another? And is a 34-member task force going to get an answer?
Well, I think the 34-member task force is going to function as a advisory group to Secretary Thompson. But yes, legislators are hearing from their constituents that, hey, we have a highway funding problem. I don't enjoy these potholes. Let's fix it.
Steve, thanks for joining us.
Kate, thanks very much.
Steve Wolters is senior producer at Wisconsin Eye. Just ahead, in honor of Galentine's Day, we're talking about the history and the science of female friendships. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.